in here for a kind of significant chunk, which is this idea, and I'm going to fast forward, of key resource experiences. So I'll tell you a little story about myself. And you may have heard me tell this story or read about my version of it. The brief version of this is that I grew up in a family that was loving and intact. I wasn't traumatized. I didn't have major health problems that were immobilizing. I wasn't terribly bullied. I wasn't beaten as a kid, etc. So as I grew up, I didn't have huge issues in the avoiding system. Also, I grew up in a kind of middle class, maybe lower middle class environment. Money was tight, but we were okay. I wasn't in poverty. I was able to have some, you know, pleasures in life and to attain goals of various kinds. I learned as the oldest of three kids to get off my parents' radar so I could do my little schemes off on the side, you know, and build my forts in the woods near our home. And also I was successful in school. So I didn't have huge issues around shocking loss or major frustration. I wasn't the target of prejudice or discrimination. Right? I didn't end up with issues in this area. But this is where my wife says, cue the violins. But anyway, over here. You know, my parents, loving, decent people, but really poor empathy, which is interesting. You know, they were loving and decent, but they had a really hard time intuiting or sensing the inner life of another person, including their impact on that other person, for different reasons. My father's version of that, my mother's version of that. So I had many experiences as a kid of not feeling really seen, or that the person they were seeing was about 6 inches dislocated from who I really was. You know, I kept moving my head over here, Mom. No. So that. And second, I have a very late birthday and I skipped a grade, so I was very young going through school, and I had many experiences as a kind of shy, dorky, nerdy kid with glasses, that being excluded, left out, kind of dismissed, kicked to the curb, unwanted. As if I was looking at other people, especially the cool kids, through a wall of glass. So what happened to me was relatively small or trivial compared to what happens to many people. But we all have natural needs for inclusion, cherishing, prizing, being seen, being wanted. Right? And for me, those needs were not very well met. It was like a thin soup, like trying to breathe through a straw. You can breathe, but there's something really missing there. This was where my issues were. So then, in life, I tried to meet this hole in my heart. I tried to fill this particular hole in my heart by, for example, building up my sense of being strong, right? Being tough. That was good, but it didn't address my need. It wasn't the medicine that could treat and even eventually cure my own particular illness. Also, I tried to have a lot of fun. Hey, I grew up in the 60s and 70s. I had a lot of fun. And I tried to be successful and, you know, impress people and attain rewards and stuff like that. That was good, right? But again, it didn't meet my need. What met my need was when I began looking for the facts, the ordinary facts of my life in college and then as a young adult, where I was actually included. I was actually wanted. I was loved. I was appreciated. I was loved. And then help myself have a feeling of it, feel something in recognizing the good fact. And then, in particular, really letting it sink in, really kind of taking it into my own body, this experience of feeling cared about over here. And that's when I began to really feel that I was truly filling the hole in my own heart. And then, you know, bit by bit, it was a big hole. So it was like I was throwing a brick into the construction site for a skyscraper. But brick by brick, day by day, month after month, year after year, I truly have felt like I've really filled that hole in my heart. So that illustrates a broader idea of what is your own particular medicine. In other words, what are long-standing unmet needs for you? Or you can think about this clinically or as a parent. Or another way to ask this question or to relate to this is to ask yourself four questions. And I find these four questions to be very powerful. And this is my most recent jock, Just One Thing, if you want to look at it. Grow a key resource inside you. The first question is, what's the issue? Pick an issue. It could be external condition, a challenge in your world. Maybe it's something happening inside your own mind. What's an issue? Or maybe what's the issue? Right? And then the second question is the key question. What, if it were more present in the mind, would really help with that issue? Right? What's a key resource? What's an inner strength that would make a difference? You know, if I'm feeling anxious a lot, it would help me to notice that I'm all right now. It might help me to relax the body. It might help me to recognize protections around me. It might help me to recognize resources in myself or in my life. It might help me to see threats more accurately. It also might help me to feel cared about by others, because in terms of these three systems, feeling loved is the universal medicine. Because feeling cared about meets this need. It's also rewarding, and it's also a very primal safety signal that we're included in love, right? On the other hand, maybe I'm over here and, you know, I'm frustrated, or I'm disappointed, or I don't feel like life has much savor to it. Well, maybe what would help me with this issue is to feel more grateful, or to focus on what does make me feel glad, or bring up experiences where I was successful in attaining various kinds of goals, including small goals of everyday life. Or I can notice that in this moment of experience, any moment of experience is almost overwhelmingly rich. If we truly open to this moment of experience, who would want anything more? Or then if we have issues down here, as I did, you know, many people do, what would help here are various, you know, these things you kind of see here. Okay? And then, so that's the second question. What would help with the issue? What, if it were more present, would make a difference? A way to get at that question, if you're dealing with a long-standing issue, is to ask yourself, what would have made all the difference in the world back then? Okay? What does my heart still really, really deeply long for? Then the third question is, how can I have experiences of that resource, that inner strength? Right? Because that's the pathway to installation. How could I have those experiences as states? And then in the fourth question, how could I internalize, how could I install those states as traits in my own brain? I mean, this is a very powerful way to think about clients and a way to think about myself, to be zeroed in on, okay, what am I deliberately trying to grow in my mind and brain, especially these days? And this model gives us a kind of map. The framework I've laid out gives us a kind of map for looking for key resource experiences. Or, if you'll tolerate this, I'm going to bounce forward, antidote experiences. What will antidote our particular form of suffering? Or what will specifically fill our own deficit? In other words, you can have the presence of the bad or the absence of the good. Both of those are problematic for people. So maybe this key resource addresses this wound here, this presence of the bad, or maybe the key resource addresses the lack, the deficit of something that was important and good. In my case, I had both. I had a lot of lack of ordinary, healthy, narcissistic supplies coming my way, and I had some wounds, some ways in which I was put down or attacked or bullied or mistreated, etc. But there's a distinction, you know, between the presence of the bad and the absence of the good. All right? So you see this framework? Okay. And then, if we want, we can internalize these useful resource experiences that address our particular need. Or a challenge we're just facing today. You know, a difficult quarter at work. An aging parent who's tipping into dementia. The arrival of another child. We can build up resource experiences in ourselves for various kinds of practical challenges. Right? So we can do that alone. Right? And if we want, now I'm going to go backwards again. Yes. we can link the positive resource experience with the negative material that the positive resource experience is a targeted antidote for. This is the fourth step, the linking step of the heal process. Right? Again, I didn't invent it. Lots of therapy uses this linking step. Lots of people do this linking on their own. The question is how to do it really skillfully and use it in everyday life. So, speaking of myself, what I would do is that, in college and then since then, really, because I know my own hole in the heart, listen to your longing. Let your longing be your teacher. Most of us defend against the longings in the heart because they're associated with pain or we're embarrassed about them. At least in the privacy of one's own mind, can we listen to the longings of our heart? Deep down, what do we still long for as an important supply to grow inside ourselves? Right? So, I knew I needed to feel included. I needed to feel prized, wanted. And so I would look for opportunities to feel that, and when I could, I took it in. Much of the time, without any simultaneous reference to my old pain. On the other hand, it was sometimes very powerful to start with the positive experience, let's say of being included or prized or seen or liked, one girl would smile at me, two girls would smile at me, that was even better, whatever. And I would start to have this positive experience, and I would sense it going into these young places inside me that really longed for and were upset and were sad and hurt, and gradually ease and soothe those younger places inside, giving them what they'd always needed. So in that way, so there are two ways we can grow key resources inside ourselves. One is in the moment. There's no reference to anything. There's no negative material that's also present in consciousness. And the other way to do it is in this fourth step linking, where positive and negative are both present in consciousness. To do the fourth step skillfully, it's important that the positive material be more prominent. Neurons that fire together wire together. We want the positive to wire into the negative. We don't want the negative to contaminate the positive. Right? It also helps, if you want, to engage the negative in kind of three levels. These levels are a little bit arbitrary, but I'll explain them. Level one is, and I'll use the experience of being cared about. So let's say right now there's an opportunity to feel cared about in some authentic, legitimate way. And yet, from your childhood or maybe a recent relationship, you didn't feel so cared about. You weren't so cared about. So level one of engagement with the negative material, which is the safest, is to be rested in the positive while being aware of the idea of the negative. That will gradually start associating the positive with the negative. Level two is to have more of an experience of the negative. So mainly I'm rested in feeling cared about, and in the distance I have an awareness of hurt, not being so cared about. And then the third level of engagement with the negative, it's the highest risk but the highest return, is to have a very active sense of the positive material connecting with, soothing, going into, calming, feeding, even replacing the negative material. Like a golden soothing balm of this positive experience being cared about, going in and touching places inside that have felt hurt or bruised or pounded on in some way, and easing them, calming them. Or like the supplies we're getting today, filling up hollows inside, where there may not have been the presence of the bad, but there was the absence of the good. Or perhaps there's a sense of this positive experience today, connecting with a younger version of yourself, giving that younger version what she or he has always longed for. That's a quick summary of a lot of material. So I thought, given the time that we have, we could actually do this fourth step, if you're up for it. But before we do that, any questions or comments about this idea of linking and antidote experiences?
Before lunch, I actually had this question, which is really quite prominent. A lot of my positive symptoms of my inner strengths, childhood and my early adulthood, have been linked to all of these negative things, like sacrifice, loss of people, through actually achieving certain things. I've made me wonder, do I have to detach these things and reattach to something else, or start thinking about moving them around? And it's a strange thing.
I think that's a skillful question to me. And first, it goes to the point I was exploring in that slide I did about negative experiences in context. You've had a lot of, if I understand you right, growth of inner strengths from painful, difficult, challenging experiences. And that's great. And it's good to know that about oneself, by the way. Oh, I learn from challenges. That's good. Yeah. The question I would have is, what's the negative you're thinking about working with? And then what would be a resource that you could grow in your mind that would help with that? So I'm kind of acknowledging the point you're raising and, in a sense, sidestepping it to inquire, what's the issue, those questions, right? And you could think to yourself privately what might be some issue. And then the question would be, what, if I could grow more of it in my mind, would really help with that? And you can use this for long-standing psychological stuff, like I've talked about here, or you can use it for fairly subtle stages of spiritual practice. So here I am, and I kind of can feel where I am. Feels like the next stage of practice is to stabilize more here. What would really help me stabilize more here? Okay. You want to try? What the hell? Okay, one more person and we'll try. Yes, please. Yeah.
Like, when you approach the relation, so, for example, asking people what they like about you, or telling people what you
want. Yeah.
But, I mean, especially, I've known the fact that things that are self-sufficient, because maybe I'm afraid of expressing how I am.
Right.
So this would be an attractive system. I mean, if I know that the person I have to work on is asking.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for sticking your neck out in multiple ways there. Giving up your body for science, et cetera. In a sense. So first, any practice has pitfalls, right? And it's helpful to know what one's tendencies are. I do myself like the fact, as someone who is quite self-directed and autonomy is a pretty high value for me, I like the fact that no matter what's happening out there in the world, there's something I can always do in my mind, if only to be with what's happening in the world, you know, that I can use to grow. I can use for growth for myself. I like that idea. I like the fact that we can do these kind of practices on our own internally. We're not dependent upon other people for that, on the one hand. On the other hand, just going to her comment about action, it's very powerful to create positive experiences through taking action, including that subset of action that's interacting with other people. Right? So research shows that one of the more powerful ways to call up and install positive experiences is by sharing about them with other people. Right? So that's one variation on that. And then another is, yeah, I myself definitely reached for these social supplies when I was younger especially. You know, I didn't do it always appropriately, but mostly it was appropriate, and mostly it was to a good purpose. In other words, a friend would say something like, oh, that was good what you said in the meeting. And I'd look at the person and make a quick judgment call and say, so, what exactly was good about it? Could you say more about that? And, yeah, some of the time I was milking it, a little bit like an addict. But all of the time, too, I was just trying to fill that hole in my heart. So I wasn't so dependent on whether people praised me or not. I love this practice of risk the dread experience in a calculated way, you know, like it's step by step and higher and higher gradient of challenge. But if a person's dreaded experience is to reveal a need, that might be a person's primary path of growth. Because we all have needs. No shame in having needs. I don't know why the word needy became this critique. We're all needy. Stop breathing for 30 seconds. We are profoundly dependent. All right, okay. So let's try this. So, right. Okay, here we go. So, I'm going to do this practice of linking with you. Feel very free to opt out of it. To do it, it will help to know what you're positive and what you're negative. And that's kind of how I'll talk about it. In other words, what's an issue? It could be something long-standing, or it could be something current, or it could be something that's stirred up by a challenging situation you're grappling with. Anybody would feel, you know, like you have a loved one with a health problem. It's normal to feel anxious about it. And we can still resource ourselves to cope better with these normal experiences we might be having. Okay? So know what the issue is, and then have some sense of what the resource experience is that you're going to focus on. When we do this practice, sometimes what happens for people, I've done this with a lot of people, is they think their resource is X, but they suddenly find themselves exploring Y, and that's where the juice is. Great. Whatever works best for you. And if all else fails, love is the universal medicine. Right. Can always go to feeling cared about. For many people, their primary resource experience is their dog or their cat, and that's great. Okay, so have a sense of what your positive is and what your negative is. Right? If you get hijacked by the negative, drop it. It's about, and it's also important to have a sense of being on your own side. In a sense, you want the positive to win. You want it to gradually infuse and soothe and ease and eventually replace the negative material. Now, it's not that you'll forget what actually happened. You know, we want to be in reality here. We want to stay with reality. But the upsetting reactions to what happened can ease somewhat. All right? It's also powerful, if you're up for it, to try to get a sense of the positive sinking down into the deepest layers of the upset, whatever that might be, what I call the tip of the root, which for many of us is deep in childhood, even pre-verbal, pre-memory. And there sometimes it can help to imagine what would have been very, very soothing if it had been available for the infant or toddler, you know, you once were. I suggest you don't do this on your own with the core of trauma. A lot of trauma therapies use linking, but they do so in a structured, very resourced kind of way. But, you know, the periphery of painful experiences, if you feel resourced, you know, you can explore this on your own. But like I said, if you start getting hijacked by the negative, just drop it and come back to the safety, the refuge of the positive experience. Let's try. So if you can, come into being present with yourself. And to begin with, help yourself get established in a basic friendliness toward yourself, a basic sense of being on your own side, an ally to yourself, perhaps an advocate for yourself. And open to your positive material, your resource experience, thinking of things that naturally activated or evoke it for yourself, moving your body into a position perhaps that really embodies this experience, if that's relevant. Letting this positive experience, this resource experience, pervade you, spread throughout your being, filling your whole body. And then, if you like, be aware of the idea of the negative material, while simultaneously having most of your attention on the positive experience. One way to imagine this is as if awareness were like a stage, and the positive material, positive experience, is in the foreground, it's in the front of the stage, lit up brightly, and off in the distance is the idea of the negative material. And both are present in your mind. It's okay if attention kind of flickers back and forth from positive to negative. And see increasingly if there can be an awareness of both at the same time. Feel very free to adapt my suggestions to your own purposes. Stay with something longer if you want, or move on more quickly from it. That said, if you'd like, you can now go to the second level of engagement with the negative, where you have a very strong sense of the positive experience, but there's more of a felt sense of the negative, also present in awareness. And then, if you like, the third level of engagement, getting an active sense of the positive going into the negative. Like ripples or waves of positive lapping up against the negative with a gently rising tide. Or perhaps wisdom or perspective, a kind of clarity moving into confusion, turmoil. Or perhaps sensing or visualizing the positive sinking down into you, filling up empty, hollowed places inside. Continuing to make the positive more prominent, dropping the negative if it hijacks you. If it's helpful, perhaps getting a sense of this positive experience, these feelings, these body states, sinking down into younger layers in yourself. Perhaps imagining, holding younger versions of yourself, whispering in her ear, his ear, putting things in perspective, being soothing, speaking the truth. As a kind of bonus, there might be a sense of receiving inside yourself these positive experiences. Perhaps a sense of easing something inside. Or something letting go. Perhaps a sense of a need met. And then letting go of the negative and resting only in the positive resource experience. taking refuge in this positive. Okay. So coming back. Most of the time when we do this linking step, it's in the flow of life. You know, you start having an antidote experience that you know, wow, this one is important for me. And I know that hole in my heart that this one goes into. I know that pain, that wound, that this is good medicine for. And you're aware of both the positive and the negative, a few dozen seconds in a row, enough, move on. What I did here was a longer version of this to slow it down so you could become more experienced with it, and also for whatever value, hopefully, it was for at least, you know, some of you. I always feel actually amazed and grateful that people are willing to do this. You know, the end of a workshop, but still, it's pretty hardcore to go after doing this kind of thing. And so I appreciate you doing that. Any question or comment from this little practice, and then we'll move to a wrap today. How was that? Or comment or question, or including how to do it skillfully, you know, how to be more effective at it. Please.
Something that I've done spontaneously. Where I find a certain difficulty is between the balm and the plastering over the cracks.
Yeah. Make sure I get it right, raising this question, are we taking in something soothing and healing, or are we just covering over the pain? Yeah. And other people have used this metaphor. The mind brain is not like a flush toilet. It's more like a septic tank. In other words, the stuff sticks around. So just covering it over might be a short-term solution, but it's not a long-term solution. And I think inside ourselves, we can feel the difference. You know, am I numbing? Am I tensing my body to push things down? Or is there an opening, a coming out? I think about the two great tools of the physician, light and air, the traditional tools. Am I airing out this experience? Am I opening it up? And then am I bringing in some kind of appropriate medicine to it? And that feels quite strong and like the difference. Yeah. And the other thing is that for every person I've known, and I grew up in California, who is endlessly preoccupied with their own neurosis and self-pitying and wallowing in their stuff, and they just want to tell you about their latest enlightenment experience, I've known 20 people, maybe 200 people, who tended to be stoic to a fault, who tended to disown their own pain. And so I think, which is the more likely pitfall for a person? And so sometimes the thought arises, oh, in doing this, I'm just covering it over. But maybe actually you're healing yourself in some important way. Yeah.
Could I
answer? Please. Oh, yeah. What else would you say?
Thank you. I think, again, it's just come to me after from what you've said, and I've forgotten it. I think forgiveness is very much to be associated with this, and it's the forgiveness of others, but more importantly, or most importantly, the forgiveness of oneself.
Yes. He's speaking to and emphasizing forgiveness. Yeah, thank you. Maybe another person or two, and then I'll finish up. Yeah.
Just associated with that self-talk and the relationship of the inner parent and the inner child. Mm-hmm. I know this concept can be problematic, but inner child work. It felt to me that the stage and the imaging was new for me. Interesting.
Yeah.
My experience has been using words to try and access the right brain feeling part of the body as the inner child. Is that something that...
Sure, that would mean... So he's raising the question of the inner child, and, you know, linking takes many forms.
Sorry, unforgiveness, particularly because the child cannot forgive and regret.
Right, yeah.
And it's the parent that has to say, I'm here for you now.
Right, exactly.
But it's words heal more than just... I mean, for me, the child needs to be spoken to.
Okay. Yeah, the thing I would simply say about this linking is the essence of it is association, positive and negative. And the more that the positive is the natural antidote, as it were, to the negative, the more impact. But any kind of positive, you know, like I said, open, spacious mindfulness of something negative is linking, right? So there are many ways to do linking. Now, some of them have some fireworks, right? You hold the little girl you once were in your lap, and she feels horrible and like an ugly duckling. And you love her and you cherish her, and everybody in the room is crying. You know, that's pretty high. That's a lot of fireworks. That's one way to do linking. Another form of linking is you're upset about something, and you speak to yourself in a wise and clear-headed way, or you imagine what your mindfulness teacher would tell you. You know, right? Don't we do that? We kind of channel other people. What would the Buddha do, right? There are many ways in which to do the linking, and I just want to be clear that even though some of the more dramatic ones get a lot of attention, a lot of the way that linking happens is in more modest and less dramatic ways. Well, I'd like to move to an end soon to respect your time and close to 5 o'clock. I wanted to say, before I go any further, that I feel very grateful to you all, truly, for being here. I mean, the generosity of your attention is very strong. And as a group of people, you kind of went into that linking practice more readily and more eagerly, actually, than almost any group I've ever worked with. So, boy, that's worth. I thought to myself, God, you guys are hardcore. And you're like, shut up, Rick, let's do the practice. So, that was great. So anyway, and I'm also very grateful to Alex and the other people at London Insight, who have been so kind to me and really supported this afternoon. So I'd like to make, if I could, just one last little point here as I kind of bounce forward, and you can read these on your own. This was the slide that we started with today, all right? And I think about the saying from Tibet, if you take care of the minutes, the years will take care of themselves. Right? Think about it, what's the most important minute of our life? It's this one, right? Or if you will, the next minute. We can't do anything about the minutes in the past. More than a few minutes in the future, we can't change very much. But in this minute, we actually have some opportunities. Right? What will we do in the most important minute of our life? Will we recognize good facts that are actually present? Will we let ourselves have beneficial, helpful, usually enjoyable experiences based on those good facts? And then once we have those experiences, will we let them sink in? Or will we waste this minute, right? I think of this saying from George Orwell, to see what is in front of one's nose takes a constant struggle, right? This minute is right under our nose. All kinds of good facts are right under our nose. Right? What will we do with them? Will we use them or will we waste them? You know, as the Buddha teaches here, think not lightly of good, saying, it will not come to me. Drop by drop is the water pot filled. Likewise, the wise one, gathering it little by little, fills oneself with good. That's the opportunity for us. You know, it's not the entirety of practice. It's not a whole therapy, but I think this process of cultivation and really engaging the neuropsychology of activation and especially installation is a very powerful tool for our healing, everyday well-being and effectiveness, and for our own spiritual practice. So you and I and all beings gradually fill ourselves with good for our own sake and for the sake of the whole wide world. So it's around. Thank you.